Hey, lovely listeners. Welcome to season two of Tales from the Doghouse. I'm Ness. I'm in Australia. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me is...
I am Stacey from Focused Fun in the US. Regrettably, this season, Lisa will not be joining us. She is going to pursue some super cool projects on her own. Since she is the funniest one of the three of us, she has promised to come back and spice things up with guest visits, so you should be hearing from her again.
So, Stacey, that means no more monkeys.
I know.
Dang.
That's really sad. Maybe we can get, like, a recording of it and just play it every once in a while for fun.
Or we could attempt to do one ourselves. No, okay, let's not do that. So what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking all about mindset.
Okay.
Surrounding training.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, that's a tricky one, isn't it?
Well, it's a big one because, you know, all training is full of ups and downs, but I think because separation anxiety is a long haul and, you know, it does impact your life, I think it's easy to get dragged down by the times, you know, your dog is struggling.
I like to tell my clients that with training, it's not a straight line. You're not always going to go forward. It's like a rising wave. So mm-hmm. You have your ups and your downs and your ups and your downs, but you're still, all your ups are still increasing. So your wave is right. Getting bigger and bigger, but it's, yeah, you still are likely to have some downs in that, in mm-hmm. there as well. Yeah.
I think the two hardest parts of training are the ups and downs, separation anxiety training are the ups and downs and just getting your head wrapped around finding coverage. So,
And by coverage, you mean finding someone to mind the dog when you're not there.
Right. So you can manage absences.
Yeah.
So I think this is an important topic. You know, what are some ways that we can reframe the process so that we can stay engaged with it and feel good about it? So I think the biggest thing you can do is set attainable goals. So I think when you are unable to get out the door even, or if you can only get out the door for a few seconds, saying, okay, I want to be able to leave my dog for 4 hours, just seems like you're never going to get there. And it can be frustrating. So I think one of the things that we have to do is, you know, when you're working with a trainer, you will feel secure in the process. So I think that part of it's kind of taken care of, but just looking at what that next step in front of you is and setting really attainable goals. So, you know, I'm going to train X number of times this week, or I'm going to work on these skills, or, you know, however your trainer is guiding you. But I think just looking at those next steps and what you can do there can really make a huge difference.
One of the other things I tell my client is to rush slowly. So you... Yeah, because the quicker you go, the more likely you are to have some of those downs that we're talking about. So it's all, you might start on your absence being 5 seconds long and you want to get out for, you know, you want to get to 2 hours, 4 hours. But that distance between the 5 seconds and the 2 hours, for example, isn't necessarily going to be quick, and you have to take it at the dog's pace. That is one of the most important things. It's probably, well, to me, I think it is the most important thing to remember when you're training a dog with SA is you mm-hmm. have to go at the dog's pace. And if you don't do that, your dog's going to fall over and your training is going to go backwards. So always bear that in mind when you're training, but also keep positive because you will get there. And those tiny little, the whole point of separation anxiety training is to train in such small increments of increases in duration that you're on the other side of the door that your dog doesn't notice those increases. So I have clients and they start, and let's say they're on 30 seconds. This is just an example. And they want to get on to 2 minutes absences, and say the dog clearly goes really well at 30 seconds. So they're like, well, why did you put the time up 15 seconds? That's not long enough. You know, I'm never going to get to 2 hours because you were going up in 15 second intervals. But the point is, your dog doesn't notice those 15 seconds. If you go from 30 seconds to 5 minutes, your dog is going to notice that increase, and it's going to react, and it's going to get upset, and your training will actually go backwards. So it's really important to just take it slowly and go at the dog's pace and tiny little increments so your dog doesn't notice.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's take the time it takes and it'll take less time overall, you know, just chipping away at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, I can see from a mindset perspective of a client that those little tiny increases do seem insurmountable in terms of, I'm never going to get to 2 hours. I'm never going to be able to leave my dog for 4 hours because we're just going up in these teeny weeny little increases in time. And I can imagine that, just, you know, it's soul destroying. But by the time they get to people like you and me, Stacey, I think they're that desperate anyway, you know, they just have to go through the process and it can be done. But unfortunately, it is a time consuming process.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think a lot of people have tried a lot of different things on their own by the time they connect with a trainer. And so maybe more open to saying, you know, at least you're making progress, even if it's slow progress. At least you're taking steps towards that goal. And I think that's what a big thing is, just making those small goals, and you can be ticking them off. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of checklists and using them to help, you know, you feel like you're achieving things, even if the durations are just going up bit by bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a slow process. And I guess hard for owners to be keep a positive mindset about it.
That's what we're here for.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, we're kind of the cheer squad. Yep.
exactly. Another thing I think, kind of along those same lines, is to recognize and celebrate wins.
Yes.
And I think the wins, I think it's really easy to just make it about duration, but I think there's a whole bunch of other stuff to be celebrating. You know, consistency is a big one. I know a lot of times at the beginning of training, there's like a lot of inconsistency in what the dog does. And then sometimes over time, even though there will still be ups and downs, they will become more consistent. So that's something to celebrate. The dog becoming more independent around the house is something to celebrate, you know, being able to go to the bathroom without your dog following you, something to celebrate. You know, for dogs who are hyper attached, being able to spend time with other people is something to celebrate. So there's a whole host of things that owners will notice in their dog as they suspend absences and, you know, take away that fear component and start working on actually like the home alone exercises with them.
I might have mentioned this before, but I've had dogs or clients say to me, my dog's not following me everywhere anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy, but I'm also really sad because I like having my dog with me. But they can still view that as a win and something really positive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's true, like there's so many factors, that there's so many flow-on effects, like even the dog that, you know, the owner's doing the training, they're going on the other side of the door for however long their dog's up to, and they'll say initially the dog will be following them to the door because it's worried about them returning, and then suddenly at some point during the training the dog says, I don't need to follow you to the door anymore. And that is a win. Like it shows that the dog's understanding that you are going to return. And I don't, you know, that is something that probably many people don't really think about until it happens. And then when it happens, exactly. They're like, oh my God, the dog didn't follow me to the door. You know?
Exactly. Or the dog that's usually, you know, even if it's on its bed, it's watching the door, or, and then you see it laying flat out, but still awake. And then you see it being able to fall asleep during exercises. I mean, those are all just awesome ways to celebrate your dog doing
exactly
better.
I love watching dogs sleep. Like that's, I mean, it's a strange part of the job, being able to see these videos that the clients send through and the dog's just lying down, eyes shut, legs akimbo, and you think this is lovely. Then you know, when you did the assessment, the dog would be, you know, the owner could get on the other side of the door for 1 second and the dog's like on hyper alert, like what's going on, where are you going,
right? Right. Yeah.
It's heartwarming.
I do love the before and afters. I just took a screen grab of for a client to show a client, just like so they can feel the win of one of their dogs grabbing their ankle as they go over the dog gate to go out the door.
Oh gosh, really?
And then now laying flat out on their bed, you know, while she's leaving. So like just kind of the before and after. It's powerful to see the progress, you know.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure.
I think another area where people can kind of feel discouraged revolving separation anxiety training is unsolicited advice. I think, you know, training your dog or having a dog is kind of like being a parent. And, you know, everybody has an opinion, and whether or not it's an informed opinion, they're still going to give it to you. So I think that's another thing that's really tough when you're working through the training and it is slow going, or maybe you're having a bit of a plateau in training and you're feeling frustrated and voicing that frustration. And then, you know, your partner or your friends or somebody will come along and say, well, you know, why don't you just let them cry it out, you know, or, you know, and it's just like, oh, you just don't get it, you know, and that can be really frustrating. So what are, do you have some tips that you share with your clients about how to deal with the unsolicited advice?
Yeah, take no notice of them. I mean, I think it's one thing having, you know, friends or relatives say things like that to you and they don't live with you in the house and they're just like these people that, or, you know, I think one of the hard things is, you know, if I can't come and meet you for a coffee because I can't leave my dog alone. Are you kidding me? What? That's hard enough. And, you know, I guess relatives and things like that, you know, are like, especially like I don't like to say this, I don't want to be ageist, but I think perhaps more mature people might be less understanding, especially because they were brought up in the age of dogs where, you know, dogs should be outside and they don't belong in the house and they're not really part of the family.
I think the way we consider dogs now is different largely, and the way we train them is largely different. So
definitely.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to an extent also raising kids. Like I think there's a difference there too. So
I think that, I mean, that's one thing with having external forces, if you like, saying things like that. But I think it's even harder if it's your partner or someone else that's actually living in the house and don't want to participate in the training. Don't want to, and when I say don't want to participate in the training, that might be partly, I don't want to do the door, you know, the work with working with the door literally on the exercises, but also I don't even want to do the share the love if the dog's hyper attached to one person and they're like, well, I don't want to walk it. I don't want to play with it. I don't want to feed it. It's your dog. You look after it. So I think that can be really upsetting and difficult for the person that does want to do the training.
Right.
What do you do about it? You just do what you can do. You know, if you have to, if they won't step up, then you've just got to carry on and just, I don't want to say ignore them, but maybe just help educate them gradually. you know, just, I think if you do the training and they can see that the dog is getting better, then they're more likely to jump on board and say, hey, you were right. I get it now.
Yeah. And I think also if you're working with a trainer, it's likely that your trainer would be able to have a conversation with both of you, you know, or all of you, and try to answer any of the reservations that your partner was having or whoever your roommates or whatever. So I think that that might be helpful. But especially family who doesn't live with you, I think, you know, the way I would approach it is I would try to explain the first time why I'm doing what I'm doing. But I think after that, I think you do have to kind of protect yourself and be like, you know, I know that you would do it differently, but this is the way that I'm doing it. And like, just kind of take the discussion off the table, I think, because you can't, I think you just, it's a little bit like politics. You might not be able to change their mind, you know, but you can, you can speak to where you're coming from. And then I think that's the best you can do.
And I mean, look, people probably have preconceived ideas of what separation anxiety training look like. So, I mean, obviously there are there is that thought of, I'll just let them bark it out, they'll be fine. Tuck it in a crate with a bark collar on. You know, all those misconceptions that we, you know, give it some food, give it a treat before you leave the house. But, you know, 10, 20 years ago, that's what trainers did as well. But we don't do, if modern day trainers that are up to date with the latest techniques like you and me don't do that anymore, and so there's, again, it's that sort of belief process that people have that isn't actually correct anymore. And that goes with all dog training, like, you know, the techniques always are moving forward, and we're understanding better about the dog's mind and how it works and how we should train them. So not just separation anxiety, but people, you don't know what you don't know, right? So
right, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So that's why I think the first step is always to try to educate people. You know, a lot of people have open minds to new information, but some people don't. And so I think if you're surrounded by one or more people who aren't willing to you know, look
have
at
an open mind,
then, then you can't keep on being your head against the wall.
And I look, some people just aren't into animals and dogs, and they just don't get that. For most dog owners, the dogs are part of the family, and they're important and cherished, and we want the best for them, and we want to let our animals know how much we love them. And for people that aren't doggy people, they don't get that regardless, so, and they probably never will, you know.
Exactly,
you, as you say, you can't beat your head up against a wall. You just have to get on with it. And and for those that live with partners, or, you know, people that are sort of like, well, I don't really care, like if a dog's in a panic, I think, or, you know, they just don't want to get involved in the training, again, like I think it's really important just to show them the results. Hey, look what we've achieved. I just went out for five minutes.
I think it's also important for those people, because it can feel very isolating if you don't have any support, right? So, you know, if you're working with a trainer and finding support there, that can be really helpful. You know, if you have one or two other friends, especially if you're trying to do something like share the love with a more hyper attached dog, I think, you know, I think it's important to find at least one person that you can reach out to when things are feeling especially difficult to help lift you up.
I'm not sure if you have one, Stacey, but I have a Facebook group, Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, which I'm building. It's only in its infancy, but it's only for people who have got dogs with separation anxiety. If you don't have a dog with separation anxiety, I don't let you in my group. And it's no, well, because it's supposed to be in a supportive environment for not necessarily clients, just people who have got dogs with separation anxiety, so they can call on each other and support each other, and you know, just be the cheer squad for people that are having mindset issues, or you know, feeling down, or and also just to share their wins as well. You know, my dog got to 10 minutes today or whatever. So
And I think a group like that, or you know, working with your trainer, that's another huge thing as far as mindset goes, is accountability. You know, knowing that somebody's going to check in on you if you haven't completed your exercise today and you were supposed to, or I'm kind of nerdy in that I think, you know, I like how granular you can make separation anxiety training. It really really appeals to me, but it's not, you know, some people find it really tedious. So if you're one of the people finding it tedious and you have a dog with separation anxiety, you still have to work through it, right? And so having somebody that is going to bug you a little bit when you haven't done your exercise yet, that can really, you know, I think one of the biggest determinants of your dog getting over separation anxiety is you, right? You managing absences, you doing the exercises, the home alone exercises, and, you know, all of those things are in your hands. If you don't stop the fear and don't build positive exercises, your dog's not going to get better. So that's why the accountability piece is huge as well.
Yeah, I like that. Also, I think it's really important to remember that if you're stressed about your dog, your dog's likely to be more stressed as well, because they do pick up on our mental attitude. So if you start the training and you can keep your and see results, and then you kind of realize that it is possible, then your stress levels go down and your dog's stress level, it's a nice flow-on effect.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to Tales from the Doghouse. We will catch you next week with another episode 2, season 2.
Make sure you like and subscribe to us. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and there's some other ones thrown in there as well. So please head over to Apple and give us a 5-star review. That would be lovely if you could.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya. Thank you.